divine. So, basically, one point that I don't think I mentioned in terms of the whole discussion of the Shir for Choresh, so that we discussed it in the context of how it was relevant to Zriya, how it may or may not parallel Zriya. It's interesting to note there is some possibility that there's a machlokas, the Bavli and Yerushalmi, in terms of what the Shir for Harisha is. You know, our Bavli says pretty clearly, really coming from the Mishnah, that which that should really be shared by the Bavli and Yerushalmi, that Harisha is the Kol Shehu. There is a statement in the Yerushalmi that seems to look more for a specific Shir. So there are those who felt this is machlokas, the Bavli and Yerushalmi. And there are others who took an approach such as the Orzarua, took an approach in line of with a point that we mentioned earlier when we were talking about Zriya, that Kol Shehu can be interpreted two ways. Kol Shehu can be interpreted as meaning there's no Shir, or meaning there's a very small Shir. So then if we say it means there's a very small Shir, then there's not that much space necessarily between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, or maybe there's no space between them. Maybe that the Yerushalmi is defining what a Kol Shehu means for this purpose.
There might be a space of a Kol Shehu between the two.
Might be a space of a Kol Shehu, right, exactly. So,
Rashi calls it no Shir.
Right, so then again, the question also becomes, what does he mean? Does he mean there's mamish no Shir, or does he mean that that there's no significant Shir, or maybe he means there's a Shir, but it's so small that it never comes up? You know, there are a couple of different ways to interpret that, so that's that leaves open some discussion.
And the Gemara does say that it's the chazal of the bizar dekra.
Right. So it sounds like there's a reason why the kol shehu was good. You're saying so it's not like, oh, it doesn't matter, we're not thinking about it. Right. It's just that the goal can be accomplished with a small amount. I think there's a.
Even when the Gemara says by bona, the Gemara says bona kol shehu, and the Gemara says also because chazal of the pute kira, whatever. So it doesn't mean literally the infinitesimal amount, even though it's saying kol shehu.
Right, it's a way of saying that you're able to accomplish a goal with a small amount. And if you were not able to accomplish a goal with such a small amount, it wouldn't be such an obvious point. That point is well taken. In terms of Malacha Shenitzricha Lagufa, to give a few more minutes to that, so essentially just what some of the points that we started to talk about. So we mentioned the fact that there is a pretty significant machlokas harishonim in terms of what the definition of Malacha Shenitzricha Lagufa is. That a lot of the Rishonim, such as Rashi and others, understood it to refer to a Malacha Siluk, that basically something you want away from you rather than something you want for a positive purpose. Somewhat similar to Makalkil, but you can't say it's the same thing because the Gemara pretty much clearly distinguishes between them. But something along those lines in defining it. While Tosfos is of the view almost alone, but nonetheless it's the more popular definition, that it means something which is at odds with the goal that they had in the Mishkan. And it happens to work also because Rashi understands that the issue is Malachas Machsheves, while Tosfos understands that the Mokar for the Malachas Rechzibufa is the Mishkan itself, so that does seem to line up in that sense. We started to discuss a little bit the question of, you know, is it clear that there's such a difference between this and Pesach Reisha? I mean, you have to say that there is, but there is some definitional issues which could overlap, and that essentially a Pesach Reisha is when, or Pesach Reisha is a definition relevant to Davar Sheinu Miskaven. And Davar Sheinu Miskaven is when action A will cause action B, and then Pesach Reisha meaning it will definitely happen. And then lo nichale, meaning it'll definitely happen, but you don't want it, etc., etc. Again, mentioning one of the major sources for that discussion of lo nichale is our other Choresh Gemara on Kuf Gimel about Ara de Chavre.
Is Pesach Reisha the other side of the coin that Davar Sheinu Miskaven?
Pesach Reisha, you have these continuing cycles. The first Davar Sheinu Miskaven should be Pater. At least according to the way we pass against most of my folks in the Marv Davar Sheinu Miskaven should be Pater. However, Pesach Reisha, for some reason, brings it back into Chiyuv.
Meaning, in terms of the action itself, Davar Sheinu Miskaven and Pesach Reisha are the same thing.
They're working off the same territory, but Pesach Reisha is modifying, in a sense, Davar Sheinu Miskaven, and then Nichale or not Nichale is modifying Pesach Reisha.
And Davar Sheinu Miskaven, Malach Shetzik Lagufa, is where. It's one action that has a different result, where both of them are
different intent. Yeah, malachim shagufim means you're doing an action that is ostensibly a malacha, but it has a different intent, basically. The way at least these most Rishonim were understanding it, that it has a different intent than the malacha. So you're digging, which is say some type of chorish, but you're not doing it for the no purpose normally associated with chorish. So there's a whole discussion. That's where the Keshe Mishnah lays it out, and there's a whole discussion. The Kadosh Lava Rav has an essay about this in his Tshuvas. That it's funny. You might think so. It's interesting. So malacha shen tzricha legufa is a machlokas, and but the Maisa, you know, we're pretty confident that it's pater. And one could argue that it should be worse than Darshan and Miskavim. Because Darshan and Miskavim, what you're doing without any type of, you're doing a completely mutter act. It happens to bring about a usher act. And Malachashin and Tzvich Leguf, you're doing a malacha. So logically, you might think that Malachashin and Tzvich Leguf should be worse than Psikreisha. So a lot of Achronim suggest that the nature of Psikreisha, which is really not our topic, but the nature of Psikreisha is that it kind of grafts the two areas together. So it's more like you actually are doing a malacha. So you shouldn't have a sense like, well, it's less than malacha and tzvicha gufa because you're not doing anything. You actually are considered to be doing something. Part of the whole definitional issue, it's interesting, so the Gemara later on has a whole discussion about cutting nails. And there the Gemara says that if you cut nails, here it's a Mishnah on Tzadi Dalet Amid Beis, Hanotol Tziparnav, Dzu Bazu, Obishenav, so let's say you use either your own other nails or your teeth to remove your nails, to cut your nails, so then the Mishnah says, V'lazer Mechayiv, V'cham Oser Mishm Shvus, and the Gemara says, V'lazer Mechlokus B'yad, V'abakli Chayiv. And then the Gemara seems to suggest that this is not true according to those who patter from Lachshon Tzvich L'Gufa. The assumption being that, or at least that's the way the Rishonim actually pick up on it, that if you hold that a Lachshon Tzvich L'Gufa is patter, so it sounds like cutting your nails is really a Lachshon Tzvich L'Gufa, because what Malacha does it connect to? It connects to the Malacha of Gozes, right, that you shear a sheep, so that is... what's most similar to cutting your nails. The difference is that they sheared the sheep in the Mishkan in order to get wool. They wanted the item that they were shearing. And here, you are not interested, presumably, in keeping your nails or your hair, if you're shaving or taking a haircut also. It seems to be maybe a parallel case, but the Mishnah does list them together here. So really, it would sound like Lachshon Tzrich Leguf should patter here. So that's how some of the Rishonim understand. Other Rishonim, such as the Ritva, seem to have a different definition. And there's a whole discussion about what he's getting at. The Stipler has a whole essay about this. And it's his language a little mysterious, but what he seems to be saying is that your hands or your face, let's say if you're shaving, are the chefza, is the object that you're working on, and therefore it's a malacha tzricha legufa. That since the cutting of the nails is a act that beautifies the hand, and shaving beautifies the face, so therefore that you're acting upon the chefza, which it's relevant to, so therefore he considers that it's tzricha legufa. So again, he seems to be working off a different definition than the Tosfos question. This is something that there's a lengthy literature about the Lalacha Lamaisa, the Shibbet Rav has a truth about this. There's a whole discussion that comes up, like for example, the army would force people to shave on Shabbos, and there's a whole discussion on what's preferable. Should they have somebody else shave them? Does it make a difference? Some of this literature, so then it gets complicated because the choices of various ways to shave. And then shaving, of course, got its own issues even during the week. So then the question is, what's preferable? Should you use powder? Should you use the scissors? In terms of Hilchos Shabbos, in terms of Hilchos shaving, a whole discussion back and forth. So within that literature, there are those who bring up, well, maybe it's letting somebody else do it to you, for example, and maybe some lachashin is rechel gufa, or maybe it's not, some achlokas are shonim. So there is extensive literature about this. It's not such an obvious point, which goes to some of this question in terms of the definition of malachashin is rechel gufa. Lamais, in terms of what does it mean when something is a malach hashem tzrich legufa? So it sounds like it means that we're saying it's only also the rabbanim. That's how most assume. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva where he doesn't fully say like that, where he seems to think that it really is somewhat of a deraisa. It's pater, clearly, that you have to say, if you hold that view, but you know, so clearly it means something less. But it's not a full-blown deraisa yechayefur, but maybe it's more machmir than the rabbanans. Others, earlier and later, clearly weren't assuming that way. So, like, for example, the question of whether kavod abrios, which is docha the rabbanans and not the raises, so does that docha malach shen tzrich legufa? So most, I think most acharim assume that it did. You know, there was that essentially when you make your calculations in terms of eterim, that it is ranked like a rabbanan. But there was some discussion about that as well. One of the nafkaminas, the different views also, is our case in the Gemara about achof per bor. So what happens if you, there's discussion about this in the pre-Moshe, what would happen if you dig this pit for the purpose of getting the dirt out of it, but it happens to be you're doing it in a way that's also a tikkun for the bor. So it still ends up being a better bor, but your goal is to get the dirt out of it. He suggests that might be enough community, the different understandings of essentially you're doing a tikkun, even though you have an interest that's different than the interest in the Mishkan. So that's also a question, how exactly that would fit in, and it might be that the other Rishonim might consider that a malach hatzrich legufa, that you're essentially doing something positive, even though you also have this side goal. So that, he thought, might fit into this whole story. It's also a question how other factors fit into this whole story. Like, for example, what if you're essentially doing a negative act, but you are doing it l'shem mitzvah? So, for example, kriya on Shabbos. Let's say if you're doing a kriya because for an avel, for some type of a chi of kriya. So, is that considered to be a destructive act because it destroys the garment, or is that considered to be a tikkun because it accomplishes a halachic goal? So that's also a topic of some discussion. It's also a lengthy discussion which we won't get into in full detail, but it's also worth being aware of, that there are those who feel that essentially any time you have some separate goal, it's going to be a malach hashem tzrich legufa, and then that factors into all, let's say, the pikuach nefesh decisions, or even sometimes less than pikuach nefesh, when somebody is forced to do a malacha. You know, sometimes this comes up also for doctors who are in training, let's say, and interns, and they're forced to do things which may not make the cut of otherwise being justifiable on Shabbos. So there are poskim who maintain that all of it becomes a malacha sheni tzrich legufa, because your interest is not in doing a malacha itself, your interest is in ceding to whoever is forcing you to do it. And it's an interesting idea. It seems to radically redefine some of the types of decisions that we make, but there is an extensive literature about that under those circumstances already we're dealing with something that is not going to be a full-blown malacha. It's going to have a malacha shein tzricha legufa status. It's an interesting point to be aware of. Okay, in terms of... So that, you know, again, we could speak much longer about this, but I don't think our schedule allows it. I think that'll probably, in terms of malach shen tzrich legufa, will probably be most of what we'll say, just to keep us on track. Any questions about any of that? Does that make sense?
According to the Tosis of malach shen tzrich legufa, there's no problem how it relates to psik reisha, right?
Well, you see, then, what the question about, you're talking about the sugya on Kuf Gimel?
No, just, you said it originally that there's a problem of what the relation, like what...
For the most part, psik reisha is really a darshan miskaven issue. The Gemara in Kuf Gimel mentions it, and then it's a question how to read that Gemara, what that Gemara is focusing on. Is that Gemara talking about that the act there is a malach hashem tzrich legufa? Or is it that it's a psik reisha of a darshan miskaven that somehow you're causing a malacha to happen through that? So there is somewhat of a hodgepodge in that Gemara of the different terms. For the most part,
it's based on that Gemara.
Yes, and then there's a Tosfos over there. That's where the Aruch comes in. So there's a whole discussion what the status of psik reisha gol nichalei means. You know, that the Aruch was of the opinion that it's mutter, lagamri, and all the other Rishonim said it was asim midrabbanan. So that discussion takes place over there. So there's a mixture of the different topics in that sugya.
But isn't there a totally different? Isn't Psik Resha and Lashon Tikkun Gufa according to those totally different? Because
for the most part, yes. I sort of don't want to cut off the possibility that you'll ever find the discussions in the same place. But to keep things relatively simple, that yeah, Psik Resha is something that modifies Davrishin and Miskavein, which is a different concept, and Lashon Tikkun Gufa, for the most part, is not about what is likely to happen. It's about what you're doing now. And the assumption is that, yeah, it is a malacha, but that it's a malacha done for a different purpose, and that should define it differently. But I don't want to say it too absolutely, because you will find places where the terminology is mixed in for various reasons and overlapping definitions and the like, but strictly speaking, they could be different arenas. If you also alluded to the point that there is some question as to what is the status of the Toldish and the Shrifa Lagufa. That one could make the case, as the Mekevus Mishnah talks about, that really Toldish and the Shrifa Lagufa should be considered nothing. Because what makes it into a Malacha? It doesn't have the Tzura, that's why it's a Tolda, and it doesn't have the Tachlis, that's a Malacha and the Shrifa Lagufa. So then it strikes out on both fronts. So it should be nothing, it should be Mutter. So that might make sense. However, it may not exactly be the case, because it could be that we have a process here, that something is first defined as a tolda by having a similar goal to an ag. And then once it exists, once we now have a list of the toldas, so then it's objectively a tolda, and if the tolda happens to be Mokshin Tzrichel Gufa, that might be a lower rung, which is also a debate, but to say it's nothing because it strikes out on both fronts is not necessarily the case. And this is relevant to the Gemara here also. And the Gemara says that Chofer, all these other things, HaChoresh, VaChofer, VaHachoretz, Kula Malach Achas, very strong parallel to the Gemara right before it about Zareya. So, again, in parallel to that, you have a Machlokus, what that means. According to the Rambam and the Ritva, these are all Av Malachos, HaChoresh, Chofer, and HaChoretz. And according to the Urzarua and to Rashi, these are Toldos. Choresh is the Av, and Chofer and Choretz are Toldos. And I think we mentioned the other day, this would have major nafkaminas for Shvius. You know, if something is a Tolda and Shvius, then it's going to have a radically different treatment, both in terms of Zareya and in terms of Choresh. So that's a major discussion. Lemaisa, why would you say it's a Tolda? It does. You could argue that it really should be considered an Av. Why does Rishonim say Tolda? So the whole question of what makes something a tolda, we didn't spend that much time on it, but some say that it's an action that's different than an av but has the same tachlis. Rabbi Zalman said it's basically either or. That it says that every malacha has a tachlis and a tzura, and if it matches only one of those two, it becomes a tolda. So really, chofer is really closer in tzura to choresh. It looks pretty much like the same thing. It's just you're doing something a little bit different. Your tachlis is a little bit different. So he says, so therefore that's, as the Primosha discusses this, is that could make that into a tolda for that reason.
Why is the tachlis different?
It's because you're trying to get dirt, you're trying to dig a hole rather than, you know, a hole is because you want a hole to be there, while the choresh is you want to make the ground softer so that you can, you're not essentially trying to change the ground in any lasting way. You're trying to just make it more receptive to the seeds at the moment. So there's definitely a difference there. Just to mention a few interesting practical points. One is there is a major question. You know, the Gemara says here that one of the ways in which you violate choresh, so the Gemara talks about haisalo gevshushus v'nakla. You have, let's say, a clump of soil and you take it away. And there's a whole discussion in the poskim whether that means it's attached to the ground or it's on top of the ground. And it's one of these areas where if you do it in the house, it's bone. If you do it in the field, it's choresh. And amarava haislo guma v'tmama v'bayis chayit mishab bona b'tmish v'choresh. And the Gemara goes on, chofer guma v'shabas v'nesach lav, okay, etc. So there is an idea that emerges from here that if you are smoothing out the ground, so to speak, if you are flattening out the surface, so then that is somehow within the choresh family. So there is a major literature about this in terms of shoveling snow. This comes up pretty often. What about shoveling snow on Shabbos? So there are those who have taken a very stringent stand on this.
Snow, it's not muksa.
So muksa is one of the concerns. The assumption is when you're shoveling snow, also that you're not doing it for fun, presumably. Whether it's muksa or not, there's a lot to discuss, because sometimes you will touch snow for fun. But shoveling snow draws on the muksa question for sure. But also, sometimes it's less relevant to it, because sometimes it's a pikuach nefesh consideration, or if not absolute pikuach nefesh, it's a safety consideration. So, say, I think in Rabbi Ribiat's book, he takes a very hard line about this. If I'm not mistaken, he says, even if you have a standing contract with a snow removal service of non-Jews, and they show up without you calling them to take out the snow, you have to tell them to go home. I don't think that's the only way to see it. Rabbi Shlomo Warman Shlita has an essay about this in his Arus HaShabbos, where he discusses, you know, whether there's still a gezeira. There's a gezeira drabanan about sweeping the floor when it's not caved. When your people used to live in houses, but they didn't have carpets, they didn't have real floors. So then there is a gezeira to sweep in those floors, which wouldn't necessarily apply if it's paved. But then maybe it would apply outside, perhaps even if it is paved. However, so he then goes through some of the poskim and notes that probably bizmanenu, when rove of the streets are paved, so we probably don't have the gezeira in such a setting for the minority of circumstances where it's not paved. And that's a relevant issue. So he basically comes to the conclusion that there is no Isser Daraisa involved in shoveling snow. Again, clearly the Shmir Shabbos, I mean, clearly Rabbi Ribiat, I didn't look at all the sources, Rabbi Ribiat must be assuming it's Daraisa to say that you have to tell the non-Jew who shows up to go home. He must be assuming that Daraisa is involved. Like I discussed something by Simon, I think he told me that Rabbi Badi thought there was also an issue that was relevant. I discussed it once by Willig, who thought that it was mutter.
For you or for the contractor?
For you, yeah. So it's,
we're talking about shoveling snow that's on the ground?
Yeah.
Oh, on the pavement. Not on the pavement, right.
Well, the pavement is the ground.
But what if it's on the ground?
I don't know, because I didn't think it's on the pavement. Yeah, we're primarily on the pavement is where it comes up.
So what, that's an issue of chorish?
Possibly. There might be a gzeira that the paved ought to not pave. That's where Rabbi Warman points out that Bezman has said that almost everything is paved, so he's not so sure there is still a gezeira under those.
What can you do? Gezeira of being mechabed as a bias?
Yeah.
What can you do it paved out to the front lawn?
Because that's not the nature of the gezeira. Yeah. You could make a new one. But it doesn't seem to be the nature of the concern. So again, there are those who are very machmer on this. Rabbi Warman, in the end, concludes there's no daraisa, but he thinks it's a different issue. You know, the issue of Shabbaso, the issue of, he has many different cheshbonos that he goes through in this tshuva. We're only focusing on the choresh relevant one. But he does talk also about the issue of Shabbaso. In his closing paragraphs there, he says that, you know, the Ramban has a famous comment in his commentary to Chumash about Shabbat Shabbaso, that even if you're not doing any malachos, but you are not at rest, then you're at least in violation of some type of an assay. You know, a person could go to his store, let's say open up his store and do business and find a way to avoid all 39 malachos. You wouldn't be able to avoid all the rabbanans if you're running your store. But let's say even if you avoid violating all 39 malachos, the Ramban would say there would still be an Isser Daraisa of Shabbosan. So he writes as well that he thinks that when it comes to shoveling the snow, you have this Shabbosan consideration also, which is true, for sure, except that, again, I don't think anyone's doing this for fun. Presumably you're doing this because there is a Sakana issue, which is what's relevant. In that context, he talks also about spreading salt on ice, which involves different malachas. We're not getting into it. Keith Makel on that, there are those who are machmer, but I think the majority of poskim are Makel on that as well. And which is, again, something that's done not for fun, it's done because there's a serious sakana involved. So I'm not sure how much the Shabbosan issue would apply if there is a sakana consideration. So I don't think, for example, that Rav Willig is concerned about it. Again, he's, you know, we're assuming that you're not saying, well, I could snow any day, but, you know, Shabbos I'm home, so that'll be a good day for me to shovel the snow. I don't think anyone's doing it for that reason. They're doing it because it fell at night and there's a sakana in front of their house. And it seems to be that the Yeshal Milas Moch to get rid of that.
I mean, it could be a chana. I don't really need a shovel now.
No, but why not now? Why is it any more relevant to after Shabbos than to Shabbos?
Because you have to shovel eventually.
Let's say you're shoveling your driveway.
Right. Or your sidewalk. Right. They want you to shovel your sidewalk. You have to shovel your sidewalk by law. So I have to do it anyway. So I might as well do it now.
That's not called Tachana, though. You know, if you need it for Motzi Shabbos, that's called, right, that's called Tachana. But if you're doing it because you could do... Doing something now that you could do any time is not necessarily called Tachana. That might fit into, you know, by Orman's consideration, that then the Shabbosan issue might be the reason. But it's not called doing it for a different time because you could also do it at a later time. Doing something now to avoid doing it later, it's a question whether that even fits into the whole definition of Tachana.
Is it really such a... I mean, if you're not like an older person or whatever, is it really such a big sakana?
Ice for sure is a big sakana. Ice is a massive sakana.
But you're not shoveling ice. You're putting salt on
ice. The ice is for sure a sakana. Snow can be a sakana also, yeah.
That's why you have boots. No boots in there.
That's why you have boots. The other people walking past your house don't have boots. And boots don't necessarily always do it either. I mean, there definitely could be a sakana element.
Does anybody here walk the shore in a snowstorm with like 6 inches of snow for a mile?
6 inches?
Yeah, Cornell, it was different.
It's definitely shy to hurt yourself.
It's better to shovel it, though, than to put salt on, right? Because the salt's going to... The only thing you're doing is turning ice into water.
If I haven't shoveled it yet.
Right, but a lot of posts can hold that smut there.
Yeah, okay, I hear that. Ice is
I mean, there are those who disagree. It's not a...
So they're equal, those two?
It seems like it, and maybe ice is actually better. They probably have more posts can hold out of the ice than shoveling the snow. And also the sakana factor is higher.
Like 0 degrees out.
They're close to equal.
Let's say on ice you could like crack away and.
Those one showers is like minus
better
20.
Than.
No, because the salt also is considered to be a grumma more than a direct action. So salt, you have definitely a lot of postmen who are gonna line up that's pretty safe in both senses of the word.
Sand's probably better because it doesn't cause the snow to melt.
Equal.
But you want to cause the snow to melt. The sand is there because it won't be slippery if you put sand on it. Does that work?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Is that about that works?
Talking about salt or sand?
Sand is more preemptive, you know, like before that.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen much of a discussion about sand just in terms of how it works. But you put salt there for the purpose of it melting. And most post-skim seem to say it's okay. Again, I'm not going to say everybody. There are those who had an issue with it. I think Rav Nassim Gestetner has an issue with it in his Chuvus, but many others felt that there's A, not necessarily an issue involved in turning water into ice into water, and... Water into ice, but maybe either way, that's also, there are those who are allowed making ice also, but turning... The Gemara talks, and the Mishnah talks about squeezing snowballs to get water out of it, but the Mishonim explain that it's in a different context, which isn't really relevant to what's going on here, and... On top of the fact that the salt is considered to be kind of a grumma, and the big sakana factor that's involved, all of those put together, a lot of posts can allow that with perhaps a little more ease than the shoveling snow, whereas maybe more of a machlokes. Mention also just two more quick points. One is, it's an interesting discussion in Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein's Sefer Chashukei Chemed, about whether or not he's talking about the situation in Eretz Yisrael where you have to worry. So it's not mamish pikuach nefesh, but it's close to pikuach nefesh. You have, for security reasons, you have to clear away the ground in order to see if there are footprints. To see if you want to reveal footprints that might be underneath the top layer of dirt. So he...
That's a neat trick.
Right, that would be a neat trick. So he feels that should be mutter. He goes to a couple of other malachas that might be relevant to it, but he says it's land that can't really be planted on, and it's a harisha, acha harisha, and it's malachas in tzvich lagufa. So all that together, he thinks there is grounds to be make on that, at least in terms of harisha. He goes to a few other possible malachas.
Grounds to be make on?
Right, yes. That literally was no pun intended, though. Just one other major issue that is relevant to all the malachas but comes out of Choresh. If you have the Rambam here, let's let me read you a halacha in the Rambam. Perek Chaf halacha Aleph. So the Rambam has a statement. So also lahotzi masal behema b'Shabbos. So you can't have your animal carry stuff for you on Shabbos. Shenamar lamanya nuach shorcha v'chamorcha v'chol behemtucha. So you have a mitzvah sasei rather of lamanya nuach. So echad shor v'chamor v'echad kol behema chayvo of any type of animal hotzi la behema afal v'yishim mitzuvah al shvisasa eino lokel if yishisur oba mitzvah asei. So that is not a lav, it's an asei, that there should be rest of your animals. So therefore you have essentially an isur asei to have your animal do malacha for you. So what's that? That's really what we call machamer. It says, l'fikach ha-machamer achar behemto b'shabbos v'hayi ala amaso yipater. So if somebody is kind of directing his animal, which is what we call machamer, on Shabbos, so, and he's carrying something for him, so that he is pater for. But it's also a bitl asei or nisr asei. So then in halacha beis he goes on to say v'halo lav mafurish b'tara. Maybe you'll say to me that it's worse than that. It's an nisr. It's not just an asei, but it's a lav. Shneamar lo sasa kol malacha ato v'nich b'techa v'yavdach v'maska behemtecha. So what does that mean? Says the Rambam, because it doesn't mean what I just said in halacha aleph. So what does it mean here? Shlo yachrosh ba. It means that you shouldn't use your animal to do charisha. V'chiyotze. So that's a real lav, that's a real chil Shabbos. The pasuk is essentially telling you that don't use this pasuk for general malacha, use this pasuk to understand that when you do charisha with your animal, that's considered to be the malacha of charisha. So the Ramban, in his commentary on the Shurashim, the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he disagrees with this whole limud. He says it still comes out to be the same thing, that he just thinks that it's clear that when you're doing charisha with your animal, that's called charisha. You don't need this pasuk for it. He thinks this pasuk is telling you about mechamer. The Rambam is saying it's not about mechamer because you need it for charisha. So the Ramban says, no, I can figure out charisha on my own because that's the way you do charisha, basically, with animals. And he thinks the way the Rambam applies the psukim is incorrect. So then the question becomes, so what about nowadays?
It's not an issue of shusas behema, it's an issue of just charisha.
That's how the Rambam understands this pasuk. The pasuk, right, the pasuk of Laman Yanuach is telling you that you shouldn't cause your animals to do work in general, do malachim in general. But the pasuk of Lo Sasech HaMalacha is specific to tell you about charisha with an animal. And the Ramban, basically, practical halacha, the Ramban and the Rambam are going to come out pretty much the same. It's just in terms of how you understand the psukim. But it's a modern question, so nowadays, what if you do harisha with machines? Let's say you have a machine that's going to do harisha with you without you're doing much physically yourself. So let's set aside all the other questions about machines, just the question of the melacha of choresh. Are you considered to be doing choresh if you do it with a machine? So there is a very important chazanish about this. The chazanish, which is relevant to a lot of other malachas, it's not just about choresh, but some of the literature plows through choresh to get to this point. So we'll mention this context that using a machine to do a malacha for you in a contemporary context when people do those malachas, let's say you have a sewing machine, people have machines do the malachas for them, so pushing the buttons, making that happen, separate from whatever electricity issues are relevant, the Chazon Ish understood that is the Tzuris Malacha, you're essentially Chayiv and Atorah for the Malacha that you did through the machine. Of course, he's also very machmor on electricity itself, so it's even you're going to be machmor, you're going to be Chayiv anyway, but you're also doing this Malacha. If you could find some way to work the machine without violating, find somebody to work the machine without you violating any electricity, and you would have been putter from the electricity angle, you're going to be Chayiv for this. You know, it'd be interesting if somebody, it's very nogeya if you split the chazanesh, if you argue with him on electricity, so then it's a question of whether it's a drabanan or a deraisa. I mean, he's going to hold it's deraisa.
Does that make a difference for, let's say, chalmoin, maybe?
It might. Yeah, it might. So then we should say that havara, if you think the issue is havara, and havara, but havara is also, I mean.
I'm saying like printing something, right. You know, if you assume that printing on the printer is a nice uman, so I'm not doing the actual printing, I'm pressing a button to do the printing.
Yeah, it could make a difference. Yeah, you have to say Chomor has a different Hagdara as far as that, because what's called the Maisum, and then in terms of it, it's going to have its own set of definitions. Well, Maisur, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, in his Tshuvas, he disagreed with this. He thought that it was only the Rabbanim, but it was not Chiyuv Daraisa for a Malacha that you're not really doing, but you're guiding a machine to do. So that has some important practical ramifications also. And that's an interesting point, which somehow does draw the discussion a little bit from this discussion between the Rambam and the Ramban. Ramban assuming that Harisha is naturally going to be with the animal because that's how you do it, while the Rambam finding a need to have a pasuk to tell you, it's a little bit less obvious that the derech of doing it is going to necessarily bring you in. So that itself is a discussion.
It would be a Durban of Chorish or like just electricity?
Presumably we'd say it's Chorish Durban, I think. Okay, so I think there's a lot more to say about Chorish, but we have to get into other malachas. So I think we'll probably stop plowing now. So our next shiur is regular time on Monday. Yeah, so we'll try to get as many of the next eight done. And we have 4 days of Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so I'll try to. Borer is a big one. Kotzer has what to be said. Amir Dasha also, we'll have to try for an average of two a day and see what we can do. Borer also, we won't be able to do this because it's too, so that the Sugya of Chatzi Shir by Shabbos is mixed into the Borer discussion. It's the Baltica discussion, whole story. Someday. Find an opportunity.
Is the difference between Shusas Behema and Mechameh?
Yes. So Mechameh is more active.
It's when you're involved, and Shusas Behema is eating when you're not.
Yeah. Seems like it, yeah.
Sometimes it's a shame the Shmira Shabbos can
I didn't see that, sir. I heard it.